This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending January the 20th, 2018. Welcome to this week's edition of the Talking Newspaper, which has been edited this week by Linda Vincent and Margaret Boyden. If you have any problems with your memory stick or the playback box, or if you know someone else who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, please contact Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. But before you call, do make sure that the box is properly plugged into the mains and is charging up. Your readers today are Norma York.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I am Noel Thorpe-Tracy. The main headlines this week are budget hotel for city centre, additional hall to be considered, and trustees resign from Hampshire Cultural Trust. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Norma.
Budget hotel for city centre. A budget hotel could be coming to Winchester High Street if new plans are approved. Travelodge, after striking a deal with the landowner, is planning to develop a new 62-bedroom hotel in the heart of the city. It would occupy the former Next unit at the bottom of the High Street, next to Rick Stein's upmarket restaurant, and a short walk from the Cathedral and Winchester Guild Hall. If approved, the site, which has remained empty since Next left in June, would undergo extensive redevelopment with dramatic changes to the visual appearance of the site. However, the plans would keep the ground floor of the site as a retail outlets, with the hotel sitting above, and access via foyer in Market Lane. James Tibbles, on behalf of the landowner, the London Borough of Southwark Pensions Fund, said, "We have been approached by various hotel operators keen to have an operation in the centre of Winchester, subsequently reaching an agreement with Travelodge. Our application, we believe, will bring the fabric of the building more in context with its surroundings on both the High Street and Market Lane, whilst making a more positive visual contribution to the town centre." Mr. Tibbles added that with millions of visitors coming to Winchester each year, the demand for the hotel in the city is clear. The plans have been met with initial optimism. Michael Carden, the deputy chairman of the City of Winchester Trust, said, "It's a remarkable idea. It needs thinking about, but it sounds like a welcome addition. It would depend very much on the design." If the project is given the go-ahead, it would become the first hotel to be based in the High Street in more than 80 years. The last hotel was the George Hotel, located at the junction with Jury Street, where Barclays Bank is currently based, which was compulsorily purchased in the mid-1930s and used as offices until it was demolished in 1956. The historic Black Swan Hotel on the corner of Southgate Street also closed and was demolished in the mid-1930s. It was famously visited by Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's book The Adventures of the Copper Beeches. The project would be designed by architects Haskell, and the decision on whether to approve the plans is expected in March.
Additional hall to be considered. A new sports hall could be built to ease concerns over the facilities at the £38 million leisure centre currently being planned for Winchester. A report put before the Winchester City Council, WCC's Leisure Centre Committee on Tuesday, revealed leader councillor Caroline Horrell will look into the possibility of developing a four-court sports hall elsewhere in the district. It follows fierce criticism of the plan to include an 8-court sports hall rather than 12 at the new Bar Inn facility that will replace the River Park Leisure Centre. As previously reported, WCC's Overview and Scrutiny Committee heard in November that a large number of councillors and members of the public had concerns over the planned facilities. Lib Dem councillor Martin Todd said that if the issue was not addressed before the plans were progressed, there would be a risk that the project could be scuppered, leaving Winchester without a sports and leisure centre. Conservative councillor Kim Gottlieb added, "The cabinet decision to reduce the size of the sports hall is misguided and, in many respects, bewildering." Councillor Gottlieb raised the issue once again at this week's committee, but portfolio holder for health and wellbeing, Councillor Lisa Griffiths, reassured members that extensive research had gone into making sure the council had made the right decision. A feasibility study, costing £50,000, will now be carried out to assess the best location and what type of additional facility would be best to support the demand around the Winchester district area. The report added that the council will explore whether it would be best to develop a new standalone facility or to add to an existing site somewhere other than in the city of Winchester. Preliminary designs and costings will also be carried out, with initial estimates in the region of £3 million. However, at a cabinet meeting in November, Councillor Malcolm Prince, a member of the Leisure Centre Committee, said, "How much extra would a 12-court facility at Bar End cost us?" "I've spoken with Councillor Guy Ashton, portfolio holder for finance. He indicated that to have the other four courts was an additional £2 million over 40 years. Councillors have already signed off plans for the facilities at the Bar End Centre, which will include a 50-metre swimming pool, a learning pool and a water play area, in addition to the sports hall. The new centre will also have a clip and climb facility, four squash courts, a hydrotherapy suite and eight treatment rooms, two large studios, a spin studio and 200 station gym. There will also be a flexible space that could be used as a creche or soft play area and cafe. A full business case for the new leisure centre is due to be completed in early 2019.
Trustees resign from HCT Board. Hampshire Cultural Trust bosses have confirmed that members of staff have already begun leaving the charity voluntarily following the announcement of planned job losses, including three trustees. In a wide-ranging response to claims of a lack of transparency, a spokeswoman for the Trust confirmed that an annual 2% grant reduction, agreed when it was set up, started in the year to April 2016, with a 10% reduction for the forthcoming financial year. A final 2% reduction is due to take place in 2019-20. The spokeswoman also confirmed that no volunteer roles would be lost as a result of the reduction in local authority grants, and defended an opaque statement by Trust Chief Executive Dr. Janet Owen. The spokeswoman said, "We have no intention of being unclear. This restructure is about ensuring all our resources are focused most efficiently on delivering great and engaging cultural experiences for a wide range of people. This is what we mean by outcome-driven." HCT is an independent charity that relies on a planned declining level of grant funding from local authorities. We therefore need to become more financially sustainable through both earned income and philanthropic support. We have embarked on a detailed and intensive consultation process with staff and have listened and acted on feedback. We are confident that our final structure will provide a strong base to grow, develop and safeguard the future of our cultural offer. As well as a number of staff members who have decided to leave the Trust on voluntary terms, three trustees have also resigned from the Trust's board since November, when it is thought the planned job losses were first revealed to staff. Claire Schechter, wife of 1979 Formula One champion Jody Schechter, resigned from her role as a director of the Trust on November the 13th, along with Michael Wright. Fellow director Helen Jackson also resigned on January the 3rd this year. The Chronicle was unable to reach the former trustees for comment before going to press. As previously reported, concerns had been raised about what the cuts at the Trust, which was set up as an independent charity in 2014 to take over the running of Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council assets, meant for its historically important assets. Professor of Medieval Archaeology and Director of the Winchester Research Unit, Martin Biddle, said, "What I want to know is, will HCT guarantee the knowledge and experience will not be lost? I hope it is possible, but they are using language I cannot understand. What the devil does it mean? I have not been able to get the assurances. I'm concerned with the opacity."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, historical items, Belgarum, first person, and editorial comment. This will be followed by announcements and what's on. So, here are the death notices. Benham, June Frances Benham, peacefully in her sleep on the 6th of January 2018, aged 84. Bennett, Jesse Bennett, passed away peacefully on the 13th of January, aged 87. Butler, Yvonne Mary Butler, née Chamberlain, formerly of Itchen Abbas, passed away peacefully in St Catherine's View Nursing Home on the 12th of January, aged 84. Dennis, John Dennis, peacefully on the 10th of January, aged 93. Gibson, David Gibson, peacefully at home. Good, John Jacob Good, aged 84, Master Thatcher of Colmore Alton, passed away peacefully on the 25th of December 2017. Hurd, Joan Irene Hurd, unexpectedly on the 4th of January 2018. Morn, Susan Philippa Pip, née Lewis Morn, passed away peacefully on the 9th of January 2018, aged 70. And Alan James Elder Rose on the 2nd of January 2018, aged 86. So, would you read the Christian comment, please, Norma?
And this is entitled "The Saints Open One's Eyes," and it's by Rosemary A. Baker. Growing up as a child in a Methodist tradition, I knew very little about saints other than the writers of the Gospels and the national patron saints, with the exception of St Swithin and the legend about the rain. He was my father's favourite, and it was only much later as an adult, having been asked by Canon Keith Walker to preach in the cathedral on his patronal festival, a great honour and especially for a Methodist local preacher as I was then, that I discovered why. My research revealed that St Swithin was the patron saint of bridge builders, amongst others, and my father had been in the Royal Engineers in the army, and so the regiment had adopted him. My parents even came to hear me, as if it wasn't daunting enough already. The other saints that I came to know about as a child was St Agatha, not a particularly well-known saint amongst the general population. We were on holiday at my grandmother's in Richmond in Yorkshire. We went most Easters while we were in this country. One year, when I was in my early teens, my father decided my brother and I were old enough to go on a longer walk than usual. We set out to walk along the banks of the River Swale from Richmond to the ruins of the Abbey at Eastby. I had been studying Latin for about 2 years. My father called me to an inscription on a plaque in the wall. I needed some help, but basically it transpired that the abbey was dedicated to St Agatha, dedicated to St Agatha, and she had been martyred by having her breast taken off with a pair of pinchers. I remembered this made a huge impression on me as a developing young woman. Dying for one's face was bad enough, but what a way to be killed. When I went to medical school, I became more acquainted with St. Luke, who, being a physician, became the patron saint of doctors. Holidays in Cornwall introduced me to St. Piran, and then living in Littleton, I learnt about both St. Catherine's. Gradually, preaching and indeed writing for the Hampshire Chronicle has introduced me to others and also to the major feast days in the Christian calendar, followed by other denominations. A rich heritage to learn from, as I had discovered. Today, January the 18th, the feast of St. Peter's Chair, the day marking when Peter came Bishop of Rome. We begin the week of prayer for Christian unity, or to be more correct, the octave of prayer, as it is actually 8 days, finishing on January the 25th, the conversion of St. Paul. It was actually started in 1908 by two Anglican priests. These 8 days are organised by the World Council of Churches, which is made up most of the various branches, denominations of the Christian Church. It is an opportunity to visit, to preach in, and to learn and study together. And as I say, that was by Rosemary A. Baker.
We have 13 letters this week, so would you start us off, please, Nick?
Yes, our first letter is entitled Look Again, and it follows on from one of our headline articles. Sir, the Committee of WARG, the Society for Winchester Archaeology and Local History, wish to express its serious concern at the decision by the Hampshire Cultural Trust to replace the remaining central specialist subject curators and exhibition officers with cultural experience roles. The specialist curators are responsible for the care of collections of archaeology and other artefacts that are ranked as some of the most important in Britain. The Winchester Collection, with Martin Biddle's 1960s excavations, and then the Brooks, not to mention many other professional and amateur digs, is of international importance. One of the tasks of the dedicated curators has been to supervise the work of volunteers in maintaining the collections. There is a huge backlog of work. The activities of these volunteers make the collections more accessible to scholars. For example, WARG volunteers working on the massive collections of skeletons from Langhills and elsewhere were important in allowing Dr. Caroline M. Stuckert to research and produce the People of Early Winchester part of the Winchester Studies series. Without the supervision of the curators, this work would not be possible. Hopefully it is not too late to have the decision re-examined. MB, certain ex officio members of the WARG committee recused themselves from this letter. And that is from Julia Sanderson, Secretary of WARG, WARG, Clifton Road, Winchester.
Why the wait? Sir, thanks to Jackie Porter for bringing up the subject of the Cart and Horses Junction at Kingsworthy from the Chronicle Letters, January the 11th. It beggars belief that, as she points out, that the junction hasn't been finished yet, and the excuses are rather feeble. More like political posturing, as we have seen from your sister paper, Councillor Rob Humby is all over the county, creating havoc with the roads. Perhaps he could be asked to finish the jobs that have been started. I'm not surprised that Jackie Porter can't get an answer. I've tried to contact him, but I'm ignored. Perhaps the job will be finished by next Christmas. And that's from Bob Whitehear from Church Lane in Easton.
Opinions, please. Sir, at the Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, we are delighted to have representation through our Winchester Area Committee. This month, we were very pleased to receive an update from Ian Cherry, Head of Programme at Winchester City Council, with regards to the major projects for the city. The Chamber supports the developments of the station approach area, as well as the regeneration of central Winchester. And we are keen to see these projects progress as quickly and smoothly as possible. We welcome opinions from your readers that will better our understanding of the requirements of local businesses for these areas. And that's from Mark Balch, Head of Policy and Representation, Hampshire Chamber of Commerce.
Unfit barriers. Sir, everyone owes a very big thank you to Wheelers, who at their own expense literally drove a bus through the anti-terrorist barriers currently in place. It proves beyond a shadow of doubt they are not fit for purpose. Just thank God the bus was not driven by a suicide bomber. Chronicle January the 11th. So, an urgent rethink, redesign is required, as this is a matter of life and death. If signage is a prerequisite on the barriers, surely the most obvious one would be no entry. And that's from A. Parker.
Where's Annie? Sir, I'm trying to contact a friend who I haven't seen since the early 1990s. Her name was then Annie Underwood, and she lived just outside Winchester. Annie was a hairdresser, but was managing a fashion shop in Winchester when I knew her. I would love to hear from Annie and to hear what she's been doing these past 25 years. My email address is wth1948@hotmail.co.uk. Looking forward to hearing from Annie. And that's from William Houston, Londonderry, Northern Ireland.
Brexit Ditty. Sir, I notice that Mr. Blair persistently pops up to put his pennyworth in on the Brexit issue. It reminds me of a ditty written to Caroline of Brunswick in the Regency period, and who was herself an embarrassment to the country. With very few amendments, I quote, "Oh, Mr. Blair, I thee implore to go away and say no more, or if that be too hard a fate, to go away at any rate." And that's from Maggie Hill, Tees Farm Road, Golden Common.
Congratulations, sir. At last, the A34 M3 junction proposal is published. And congratulations to the team involved. A proper solution to the problem, doing away with the ludicrously inadequate cheapskate roundabout that has brought massive traffic misery and unnecessary pollution from more or less day one. So, before the environmentalists witter on about the damage to the floodplain, river and various wildlife, let us not forget that all of those sorts of problems can be solved. But miles of stationary or stop-start traffic creates massive pollution. And no, the better road creates more traffic and pollution argument really doesn't wash either. Can anybody really believe that the essential traffic on two such major roads that collide at Winnall can just go away or be left to logjam forever? Please don't think the railway will solve business traffic either. 2023 isn't soon enough. And that's from Neil Dewey, Brayside Close, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Roundabout. Sir, I refer to Councillor Porter's letter, Chronicle January the 11th, regarding the Cart and Horses Junction, and would agree that the junction needs to be altered either to a roundabout or to traffic light controlled. Unfortunately, Hampshire County Council has indicated that they have insufficient funds for either option, and as such we are left with a pig in a poke and just tinkering with the current layout. The problems are mainly due to poor layout for the volume of traffic, poor driving standards, and the inability of drivers of longer vehicles turning right towards the M3 to judge when they have left the back end of their vehicle sticking out into the northbound lane of the A33. Unfortunately, Councillor Porter's stock solution to all traffic issues is a reduced speed limit, But when Hampshire police were asked if speed was an issue in the cause of the accidents, the answer was that they did not hold data on the causation of accidents. Councillor Humby has decided that a traffic regulation order will soon be advertised to reduce the current 50 mile an hour limit. But when asked for evidence that speed was an issue, I have yet to receive any supporting evidence. Councillor Humby has indicated that unsubstantiated speed limit reduction schemes were a waste of money and generally not accepted by drivers. So I do hope that he isn't about to compound one error with another by continuing with the TRO. Mrs. Porter's statement that 1,300 individuals have responded to a one-sided question of speed reduction as a solution to the problems is not hard evidence, but merely states support for her view. If asked, a substantially greater number of local people would support a roundabout or traffic light control. So, Councillor Porter, if speed isn't an issue here, but getting the right solution is, then surely all parties should press for a definitive long-term solution, not some half-baked speed reduction scheme coupled with the introduction of streetlights on the edge of the South Downs National Park. A further waste of money. And that's from Tony Stevens, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
And another one about roads. Design flaw. So the much-needed M3 Junction 9 improvements, chronicle January the 4th and 11th, has been met with much fanfare and praise. Indeed, I think the idea to have direct slip roads to the A34 is great. Unfortunately, there is a serious design flaw with the proposal that has been put forward. One of the benefits identified is that it retains access to the A33 northbound from Junction 9, a route which provides access to the Worthies or back into Winchester, avoiding the one-way system. However, the design will entail merging from a slip road onto the A34, changing lanes and immediately moving off to the right onto the A33. Judging from the Highways England video, the distance between the slip roads is just the length of a bridge across the Itchen, so maybe 20 metres. Highways England have also published their technical appraisal, which provides the following detail. 5.95 north of the existing River Itchen Bridge, the existing A34/A33 diverge will be widened to allow two lanes to run continuously on the A34 with a non-recommended offside type, a taper, diverge to the A33. TD22 states that an offside diverge is not recommended due to safety reasons. However, this is unavoidable in this case without significant construction work, similar to option 11. TD22 appears to be the highway's design manual, so the offside A33 diverge is not recommended at the best of times, but there is no allowance at all for the near side merge leading to an offside diverge. The closest is the near side merge to the near side diverge, where the recommended distance appears to be 1 kilometre. So it is acknowledged the design is not as safe as it should be, which means life-changing accidents will be an inevitability along with the regular traffic chaos. Hopefully, other members of the public will respond to the consultation identifying this problem, and this element will be reconsidered and improved with mitigation measures such as an average speed camera zone to reduce the speed differentials between lanes 1 and 2. Otherwise, I fear we may be back in 5 years' time looking to the headlines of how to improve a deadly junction. And that was from Stephen Kahn, North Hanger Drive, Abbott Spartan, Winchester. And I do hope you took all of that in. It was quite complicated.
I'll be asking questions at the end of the broadcast.
We diverge to a different subject now. Fight cancer. Sir, at a time of New Year resolutions, why not pledge to fight for young lives struck by cancer? Click, that CLIC sergeant, would love everyone in Hampshire to get inspired to start fundraising in 2018. Last year, from Hampshire, Click Sergeant supported 194 children and young people with cancer and their families. Could you consider asking everyone at work to donate their unwanted and unused Christmas presents? Have a re-gift sale and donate the proceeds to Click Sergeant? We can help you make your sale a success by providing posters, balloons and banners to advertise your event. Well, how about doing something different, like becoming a charity stamp champ, signing up to a half marathon, organising a sponsored walk or a quiz? Any support really will make a difference to the families we support. Our research shows that when a child or a young person is going through active treatment, the families spend an average £600 extra a month, a massive strain on budgets. This isn't right or fair. With your help in 2018, we can reach those families to help minimise the damage cancer causes to young people beyond their health. www.clicksergeant.org.uk, and that's spelt CLICSARGENT. And that's from Liz Blunt, Click Sergeant.
This is a letter from Natalie Webb, the Chief Officer of the Citizens Advice. Seek debt help. Sir, Joanna Lewis is not alone in her struggle with debt, chronicled January the 4th. Citizens Advice see a huge surge in demand for debt advice at the beginning of the year. Christmas can take a heavy toll on people already struggling to make their money last and leave them without a debt burden. But this needn't become a crisis. Problems can be taken care of if you seek advice early. The new year is a good time to get on top of your debts, cut your costs or budget better. Citizens Advice Winchester District can help you review your situation so that you can make decisions that improve your financial security. Our top tips. 1. Work out how much you owe. Make a list of who you owe money to and add up how much you need to pay each month. Number 2. Prioritise your debts. Your rent or mortgage, energy and council tax are called priority debts, as they can have serious consequences if you don't pay them. These should always be paid first. Number 3. Work out how much you can pay. Create a budget by adding up your essential living costs, such as food and housing, and taking away these from your income. Any money you have spare can be put towards your debts. Number 4. Paying urgent debts. You may have several priority debts and can't pay them all. Contact all your creditors to find out if you can negotiate on how much you pay or when you pay them. Number 5. Paying non-urgent debts. If you have any money left after paying priority debts, consider getting a free debt management plan. You'll make one monthly payment to the plan provider, who will handle paying your creditors. Number 6. If you can't pay your debts, if you've got little or no money spare to pay your priority debts, seek advice from us straight away. Citizens Advice Winchester District, also in Bishop's Waltham, expects to see over 120 new clients during the first 3 months of the year seeking advice on debt. If you're struggling with debt, you can call into our office in Winchester or Bishop's Waltham, or call 03444 111 306. That's 03444 111 306. And that's from Natalie Webb, the Chief Officer of Citizens Advice in St George's Street, Winchester.
Philip and Megan. Sir, the speculation and concern about the background and ancestry of Meghan Markle, the American who is soon to marry Prince Harry, is almost an echo of the situation Prince Philip faced in 1947. The roles were reversed as the bridegroom, to be, was the subject of scrutiny as he was going to wed Princess Elizabeth, the heir to the throne. Although he was born in Greece, Philip had been brought up in England, educated at Gordonston and Dartmouth Naval College. When he was naturalised as a British citizen, he took on the surname Mountbatten, the family name of his uncle, Lord Louis, and Philip had spent many visits to Romsey as a youngster. The nation was still trying to return to normality after the turmoil of the Second World War when the announcement of the engagement was made. Then rumours started about the background of Philip, as he had German relatives and sisters married to Nazis, but there was no reason for him to be blamed for any misconduct. He had been a serving naval officer during the war. Plans went ahead and the fairy tale wedding took place on November the 20th, 1947, a love match which has endured, and the happy couple celebrated their 70th anniversary recently. The Queen has reigned since the death of her father, George VI, in 1952. Prince Philip, as Duke of Edinburgh, has made his mark on this country in so many ways. With the passing of years, the whole royal family have become more approachable, meeting more and more of the public, sharing social occasions and attending many different functions. The walkabouts are a great success and they support many charities. They have suffered the loss of loved ones, the murder of Philip's uncle, Lord Mountbatten, and seen the breakup of their children's marriages. But when they exchange smiles and glance, they speak volumes of how much they care for each other. If the newlyweds bond with the present young royals and they all follow in the footsteps of the elders, all should be well. And that's from Daphne E. Smith, the pastor, Pastures, Cheriton, Alsford.
A further comment on the earlier article about HCT proposals. This one's entitled Thomas Micklem, Never Mayor But Pro-Austerity. Sir, I'm grateful to Bulgarum for the article on my forthcoming Hampshire paper on Thomas Micklem, architect, surveyor, drainage expert, councillor and even auctioneer, chronicled January the 11th. But an error has crept in. He was never mayor. Unlike his contemporary and political opponent, Winchester's other political architect, Thomas Stopher, Stopher was mayor three times and has his portrait in the Guildhall. Some of Stopher's buildings are listed, such as De Lunn Buildings on Jury Street. None of Micklem's greater output is. There seems to have been little love lost between them. Stopher kept a diary and didn't even mention the death of his younger rival. The fancy garb Micklem is wearing in the photo taken in Abbey Gardens is just the ceremonial wear for a councillor. The Hampshire Cultural Trust, HCT, collection has at least one such hat in its stores, together with the specially made metal box for storing it. I was shown it when the archivist was finding Victorian photos for me. Which brings me to the HCT. Probably most people are unaware of the extraordinary riches they look after. When Hampshire County Council voted to hand the management of their collections to the new HCT, they reasoned that, I quote from the HCC paper of July 2014, the creation of a new trust with the merger of Winchester City Council Museum Service provides the greatest possible long-term resilience against the anticipated financial climate, as the trust would have new revenue funding streams, including tax relief, external grants, and philanthropic donations. It seems the greatest possible long-term resilience has lasted just over 3 years. it would be interesting to know how much of the tax relief, external grants or philanthropic donations have been achieved. It may be hard to defend cultural artefacts in a climate of such ruthless cuts that children's respite services are slashed, but the two local authorities have considerable reserves and considerable responsibilities to their unique history. As it happens, I think from my researches into 19th century Winchester politics that Micklem might have approved of austerity, while Stouffer would have opposed it. And that's from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And thank you to all our correspondents. If you want to contact the Chronicle, send letters for publication to letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, all lowercase, and Hampshire Chronicle is all one word, or by post to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. SO238AL. So, let's track in time with historical items, starting 25 years ago, please, Jane.
25 years ago, Friday, January the 22nd, 1993. A country lane north of the village of Beauworth, 8 miles east of Winchester, was again closed this week because of flooding caused by heavy rain. A 150-yard stretch of the road between the village and Shawley Lane was completely impassable, with muddy water up to 2 feet deep in places. It has been flooded for over 6 weeks. The road is notorious for flooding, with some villagers remembering similar problems up to 40 years ago. Several attempts have been made to solve the problem over the years. Landlord of the nearby Milbury's pub, Len Larden, believes the flood is damaging his trade. "People come up to the flood and turn back," he said. "It's always been a problem, and it will be there for the rest of the winter, and even in the summer if the rain is heavy." A £1.5 million scheme for the homeless in Winchester has been scrapped because of the financial crisis gripping the City Council. The Moorside project, a 50-bed hostel and crisis unit proposed in Union Street, needed city backing to go ahead. But a financial row with the district auditor has left the authority unable to support the plan because of a freeze on capital expenditures. Housing Committee Chairman John Cloyne said the news was a bitter blow for the city's homeless. "There's a crying need for this, and it's a great shame it cannot go ahead. But I just don't see what we can do about it at the moment." The imaginative project was a partnership between the Shaftesbury Housing Association and the Winchester St John's Charity.
And 50 years ago, please, Norma.
Saturday, January the 20th, 1968. There's two articles here. Conda Southern Limited of Winchester are to supply the principal building for the jute mill at Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. This is the second time Conda has been involved in Ethiopian industrial development. In 1965, they shipped a structure for a cotton mill for the same Ethiopian group of companies. The mill is for the Fibre Company of Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, part of the Saban group of companies. A vigorous and growing industrial organisation directed by M. Alphonse Alexan, negotiations were finalised in Addis Ababa by Conda's export sales manager, and the contract worth £44,000 includes provision of credit facilities for the client. The Conda Group is Britain's largest manufacturers of industrial steel-framed buildings, and their factories are at Winchester, Burton-on-Trent, Darlington and Cumbernauld. And the second item is, the cost of providing a library service in Hampshire is expected to top a £250,000 mark in 1968-69. This is an increase of £78,405 on the cost for the present financial year, which by March is expected to be just under £1,000 more than was anticipated. These figures were accepted by the Hampshire Education Libraries Committee. The figure will now be considered by Hampshire County Council's Finance Committee, who will review all the county's proposed expenditure in the light of the present financial situation.
And further back, 100 years ago, please, Nick.
These are two stories from Alsford from January the 19th, 1918. The death occurred on Wednesday of Mrs. Jane Dory of the Dean. The deceased was one of the oldest inhabitants, having reached the age of 80 years and had resided in Alsford for 40 years. She was the widow of the late Mr. James Dory, farmer, and by a singular coincidence died on the same date as her husband, who passed away on January the 16th, 1901. She was highly respected, and until she was taken ill about a month ago with bronchitis, was especially active for her age. She leaves two sons and two daughters. The funeral will take place on Monday afternoon. And the second article, in common with other parts of Alsford, has felt the effects of the shortage in food supplies, this being especially so in connection with meat. To add to the shortage, a large number of men are billeted in the town on government work. To meet the present position, so far as the poor of the city are concerned, owing to the great scarcity of meat, Councillor C. Salter has undertaken to provide oxtail soup on 3 days a week at St. John Street. This has already proved a boon. The first distribution was on Tuesday, when 47 children took soup away.
And finally, for 200 years ago, back to you, please, Jane.
This is from Monday, January the 19th, 1818, and a very sad first article. A farmer in Chedderston, Suffolk, had a child who died very suddenly. Its mother found it dead in the cradle, in which she had laid it a short time before, in apparent good health. She was so much affected by the loss that her husband sent her on a visit to her mother, in hopes that a change of scene might restore her spirits. A few days after her departure, the remaining child, who was between 5 and 6 years old, was found drowned in a pool near the house. This affliction, added to the former, nearly broke the heart of the unfortunate mother. On Tuesday, there was an alarming report that the same farmer's house was on fire. Every assistance was immediately given, and it was extinguished without doing much damage. But it was soon discovered that it had been wilfully set on fire by a servant, who has been nursemaid to the two children. She confessed that she had set fire to some straw in the apple chamber, and that her life was a burden to her, and that she committed the act in the hope that she might be hanged for it. This has given rise to a suspicion that she destroyed one, if not both, of the children. And the second article. The person who was for some time committed to Andover Jail for having exposed his wife for sale in the public market, but afterwards admitted to bail that the present sessions, was discharged, it being understood by the court that he was entirely ignorant of committing any offence. An inquest was taken by Mr. Shebear on Saturday last at Overton on the body of Thomas Mills, an eccentric old man who was found dead in an outhouse where for years he had constantly slept and from whence no persuasions could move him. Verdict, died by the visitation of God in a fit.
And back to the present. Norma has three items from Belgarum, which is an alternative look at the news.
And the first one is the hospital 100 years ago. 100 years ago, Winchester was rather a different place, as our From the Files feature shows. An article from December the 29th, 1917, details how far from the twinkling lights of the Guild Hall, the High Street and the festivities of the traditional German Christmas market, the city was a place gripped by the fear of the Great War. The article began, In the observance of Christmas at Winchester, there has been none of the jollity and merrymaking of the past. Moments are too anxious and serious for anything of that. Another observation made was that of the state of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The A&E currently faces an uncertain future following the shelving of plans for the new critical treatment hospital. However, on December the 29th, 1917, the Chronicle highlighted how it had been undergoing improvements. It read, "There have been remarkable developments within the past 2 or 3 years. Many of the improvements are such as would have been made in normal times in an institution of this size and importance, controlled by a committee whose desire is that this, which is the oldest hospital in the provinces, shall also be maintained as one of the best equipped out of London." And there is a picture of the High Street of Winchester in 1910. And the second one is Odds and Sods for the Lions. The Meon Valley Lions Club have completed another successful Christmas charity collection for those in need, raising around £4,700. But in amongst the generous donations from the public put to their charity bucket, into their charity buckets, the group have also been given a range of intriguing and bizarre items. As well as legal tender, they amassed an assortment of foreign currency, including £12.73, US$1.16, Canadian 5 cents, 1 Indian rupee, 25 Costa Rican clones, something unidentifiable from the Middle East, a Geton Telefonico token, and half a pee, obsolete since around 1984. There were also donations of buttons and a Phillips crosshead screwdriver bit. As an aside, what were people thinking when they put a button into the collection bucket? The usable foreign currency was auctioned among the Lions for £15.20, and member Roger Morfill is now figuring out how to organise a holiday that takes in Europe, USA, Canada, Costa Rica via India, so he can spend the cash. And the last one, Calendar Star. A Winchester resident has got their face among the pages of the 2018 calendar. Wilf, a tabby and white tomcat, has been chosen to feature in the Cats Protection Cats Calendar 2018, which showcases felines adopted through the charity's work. The Winchester and District Branch cat, who is Mr. December, was adopted by Hannah Edwins, who visited him in his foster home after being drawn to his face on the charity website. Hannah said, "We thought he was so handsome when we met him. Wilf just captured our hearts. Now he's got us totally under his paw. He is not a lap cat, but every morning he jumps on our bed for cuddles and face rubs. He's got such a big personality. He brings us moths as present and spends hours watching birds in the garden. He's a big, chatty cat who definitely makes himself heard. When we had our first baby, we were worried about how Wilfie would react. We needn't have. Wilfie and our son have become firm friends. We can't imagine life without Wilf. He's a character and we are very happy to give him a home." And there's a lovely picture of Wilf curled up with his tail tucked under round him and sound asleep.
Ah. And now here's Nick with the first person.
A legal way to make millions. We could do with more cash, that's for sure. The country is £1.7 trillion in debt and we're struggling to pay it back. Meanwhile, Theresa May is bombarded with demands for yet more spending on everything from education to elderly care. Most of us want the NHS to have more money, and our defence forces warn that cuts are rationing their practice ammo. Everyone has ideas on what the country needs, but unfortunately, most of the ideas require cash we haven't got. So, I'm mulling over an idea which, according to some, could actually reduce national outgoings. This controversial legal reform has been talked about for years, but so far it has always been dismissed. People fear it would be an irresponsible gamble with the nation's health. The scheme's advocates counter that by reducing the need for spending on police, courts and prisons, it would free up cash for other things. High-profile advocates, including Sting, Peter Lilly and Sir Richard Branson, think that, far from increasing offences, the scheme would actually reduce everything from common assault to international organised crime. Campaigners claim the proposal would offer a further valuable attribute. As well as saving money, they say it would actually make money, potentially for councils as well as central government. Possibly not millions of pounds, but billions. The scheme has been tried in America and seems to work. So what is this golden economic reform, and could it work in Britain and in Winchester? The reform would legalise possession of cannabis and allow sale of the drug at regulated potency and price through council licensed shops. As well as raw cannabis for smoking, the adults only shops would probably sell drinks and foods laced with the drug. A cannabis tax introduced with legislation in the US state of Colorado 4 years ago has already delivered $1 billion to the public purse. On holiday in America 2 years ago, I ventured into two cannabis shops and found the staff a little naive when I asked them about the health risks of inhaling hot smoke. But these seemed calm and ordered premises, much like hobby or craft shops. At the last general election, the Lib Dems included cannabis legislation in their manifesto, claiming that it would yield £1 billion a year for the Exchequer. The UK has 10 times the population of Colorado, but cannabis is less popular here. Champions of UK legislation say the current situation brings the law into disrepute. Possession carries a sentence of up to 5 years, and a conviction can blight a young person's life chances. Advocates claim that the drug is less harmful than alcohol, which is legal. A historical parallel quoted by campaigners is US prohibition. That 13-year ban on alcohol was easily thwarted by armed criminal gangs who grew rich by supplying booze illegally. As a parent in the Winchester area, I was concerned that my children might take to drugs. Grown up now, they both tell me they were not the least bit interested, and researchers say the popularity of drugs among young people is no longer rising. Ingesting a psychoactive substance is unlikely to do you much good, but I remember a dropout student I met decades ago. He maintained that the only way cannabis can kill us is if a one-ton parcel of the stuff is dropped on your head. It seems he has avoided being flattened by the drug because he is today still alive, apparently a healthy and successful executive. And that's by George Hayter.
And Jane has this week's editorial comment.
This is headed Hampshire Chronicle, our 243rd year. Editorial comment. Welcome addition to the High Street. There will be some who sniff at the proposal for Budget Hotel Travel Lodge to move into the next premises on the High Street. The chain offers bedrooms from just £29 a night. It proposes to move into the floors above the shop. Under its plans, just submitted to the City Council, the ground floor unit would be converted into three units. This is good news. Until recently, there was a chronic shortage of hotel rooms, only slightly alleviated by the opening of Premier Inn in Winnell in 2014. Travel Lodge will be the first hotel on the High Street since the 1930s, when the Black Swan was demolished for the widening of Southgate Street and the George Hotel was converted into offices before its demolition for the widening of Drury Street in 1956. The Travel Lodge opening will bring diversity to the main thoroughfare, plus the chance for smaller, independent traders in the three small units. Some critics will bemoan the arrival of a budget chain and the loss of businesses such as Jones Bootmaker and Laplace, also reported in this issue. But they forget that high streets are dynamic, ever-changing places. As businesses come, others go. It would be interesting to see what letters were sent to the Chronicle when those two historic hotels were knocked down. Did people bemoan the destruction and predict the end? The city survived.
And now this week's announcements, starting with What's On. It's two concerts at Winchester College. On Tuesday, January the 23rd, an informal concert, Recital Room, Winchester College at 4:45pm. And on Thursday, January the 25th, chamber music concerts at the Music School Hall in Winchester College at 7pm. Chopin, Schumann, Martineau and Beethoven. And you can find out about that on 01962 621 122. That's 01962 621 122. And then at the Discovery Centre on Wednesday, January the 24th, A Family Blown Apart, Winchester Discovery Centre, Drury Street, 7:30pm. Winchester resident Danny Habel tells a harrowing story of how his family was affected by the Holocaust, with members fleeing Nazi Germany and ending up scattered across the globe. There will also be an exhibition of personal artefacts related to the Jewish faith and information from the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust, and that is free. And finally, as the dinosaurs are taking over Winchester Science Centre this weekend, visitors will be able to meet an animatronic dinosaur and its offspring as they roam the main exhibition area of the Science Centre at Morne Hill, enjoy hands-on dinosaur-themed activities in the Invention Studio, check out the Dino Discovery Trail around the exhibition floor, and dive into the Paleontology Pit exhibit. On Sunday, January the 21st, the Hampshire Cultural Trust will be bringing along some fossils from Twyford Gap, as well as Iguanodon dinosaur bones collected by a Winchester resident. For more information, call 01962 863 791. 01962 863 791. Lighting up time ended today, Friday the 19th of January at 7:59am and begins at 4:34pm this evening. On Wednesday, the 24th of January, it ends at 7:53am and begins at 4:42pm. Now we continue with further items of general news, starting with Norma.
New retirement homes. City chiefs have given a green light for a former school site to be converted into 29 retirement apartments in Winchester. The plans, approved by Winchester City Council, will now see the King's Schoolhouse site on Sarum Road transformed into a new retirement housing development. A formal decision on the Renaissance Retirement's proposal to redevelop the site with 29 one- and two-bedroom apartments for older people was made last week following months of discussions. Specialist house builders Renaissance Retirement secured its interest in the Hampshire County Council-owned site following a formal tender process in 2016 before it launched its plans and last year. Simon McFarlane, Associate Planning Director at Renaissance Retirement, said, "After 12 months of work, we are really pleased to have obtained permission for our first scheme in Winchester. We're grateful to the Council for the way in which it has worked with us, particularly over the course of the last few months, and we're keen now to start building our development, which will make a positive contribute to the city's housing stock. It is expected that initial works will begin in this spring, starting with the demolition of the existing buildings. Construction of the development would take up to 18 months to complete, and with the first apartments due to be ready in the autumn of 2019. Nick Watkins, Development Director, added, "Obtaining permission for this scheme in the first week of business is a great start to our year. We have long sought a site in Winchester, and while not only helping improve housing choice in the local market, the capital generated by our purchase of the site will provide valuable revenue for the County Council. Our sales team already has expressions of interest in our scheme." And there's an artist impression of a three-storey building, and it's got like a glass atrium at the front and some balconies as well.
Marwell gets smart at keeping warm. Marwell Zoo is using artificial intelligence to help heat an animal enclosure in a world-first experiment aimed to reduce its electricity bill and carbon footprint. The zoo, which spends around £150,000 a year on electricity, has teamed up with technology company IBM to install a smart heater for the Nyala antelope, which are native to southern Africa and prefer warmer climates. The technology uses an algorithm that relies on data from a grid of infrared sensors to detect if the antelope are in their pen. If they are, then the temperature is too low, then the heating automatically turns on. So far, the algorithm is making the right decision about turning on the heating for the Nyala antelope 95% of the time. The zoo hopes the experiment will save 30 to 40% on bills, and if successful, will be rolled out across other animal houses. Duncan East, head of sustainability at Marwell Zoo, said, "We're really excited to be working with IBM on this novel solution to heating control for large animal housing. Typically in zoos, large-bodied animals are kept in houses where at least one door is left open at all times, so the animals have access to their paddocks. This makes it very difficult and expensive to heat the whole house." He continued, "Instead, these animals are kept warm by infrared heat lamps, which work by only heating the animals in front of the lamp. A number of lamps around the house provide good coverage, because it can also result in heating areas with no animals if they have gone outside or are all together in different parts of the house." IBM's Chief Technology Officer for the UK, Professor Andy Stamford-Clark, said, "The algorithm we are using enables us to train the system using lots of examples. This has enabled us to create a system that can process data accurately with very few false negatives. There is a lot of interest from other zoos." And there are some pictures which accompany this, showing the Nyala antelope, both in normal photos and taken by infrared sensors. And one of them is a close-up full facial that makes it look as though the Nyala antelope might have read you this article.
Pub reopens after fire. A country pub near Alsford has reopened after a kitchen fire forced it to close in November. The Bush Inn in Ovington was saved from interior damage thanks to the fast-acting actions of the manager, Carlos Diaz. Speaking about the reopening, retail development manager for Wadworth, Mike Phillips, said, "The Bush is one of our best pubs and it was devastating that we had to close following the fire. We are now delighted that it's reopened its doors and can welcome back locals and visitors alike. The closure meant it lost the lucrative Christmas trade." The secluded Bush Inn has been in Ovington since the 17th century and sits on the southern banks of the River Itchen on the well-known walker's trail, the Pilgrim's Way. And there's a picture of the Bush Inn sign hanging in Ovington near Alsford.
Cathedral to open doors for behind-the-scenes look. Winchester Cathedral is once again throwing open its doors to allow members of the public a behind-the-scenes look at the iconic site. Although what you normally see of the city's famous landmark is the building and the worship that takes place within its walls, the work of the millennium is continued day by day behind the scenes to maintain and conserve the building and its traditions. Much of it's normally hidden from view, so this is an ideal chance to find out what makes it a living community. The open evening is taking place on Tuesday, January the 30th, starting with evensong sung by the Cathedral Choir at 5:30 p.m. and activities and displays running from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Then there will be a short recital by the Boy Choristers at 7:30 p.m. Visitors can also come and see how the cathedral's ancient manuscripts are restored. There will be a display focusing on the current conservation programme of the 12th century Winchester Bible, which is currently not fully available to view during that work. But there is a special temporary exhibition showcasing one of the four volumes itself. The cathedral curator will be on hand with images and explanations about the exciting work which is taking place. Jane Austen is one of the cathedral's most famous residents, and there is a permanent exhibition near where she is buried which tells of her life. Guests can meet the stone masonry team, who continue a centuries-old tradition, and those who look after the vestments and adorn the cathedral for services through the year. There will also be a chance to have a go at calligraphy, see the flower arranging in action, and meet the vergers, who will demonstrate the art of candle carving. There are also activities for children, displays from the Friend of the Cathedral, Music Department and Head Gardener, and other groups within the organisation who make the great church tick. Entry to the cathedral's open evening is free.
Support for Woodland BMX track at Bar End reaches 22,000 names. Campaigners trying to keep Woodland used for BMX and mountain bike trails for more than 20 years from being bulldozed have said they are open to all options for saving the site. Users of the space next to the St Catherine's Park and Ride at Bar End say Winchester City Council are planning to clear the spot to make way for a 14-bay coach parking area. The petition to save Bar End Trails on land owned by Hampshire County Council attracted more than 1,000 signatures in the first 24 hours and this week reached more than 22,000 names. In an email seen by the Chronicle, Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Environment and Traffic, said a meeting could be arranged to look at land options and whether any other sites were possible. I have a vision of this area becoming a sports hub for all sports, and there could, of course, be some future synergy with the BMX offer, she said. Rory O'Sullivan, 37, of St Cross Road, has been using the trails since 1997. He said, "We do very much want dialogue with the council, and we are more than willing to listen to all suggestions and take action as needed to secure the future of the site. We are, of course, open to all options of legitimising the trails, if need be, to secure its use for future generations, including my own three boys who are just starting to ride. We have youngsters from all backgrounds at the Woods, from Highcliffe, Winnell, Stanmore to Winchester College, all enjoying letting off steam in a non-structured environment, with no membership required, no fees or other barriers to entry, as is so common in other sports." A City Council spokesman said talks would continue between the City Council and BMX cyclists, aimed at finding a solution. And that article is accompanied by a photograph of campaigners gathering together, mainly young people with their bicycles, and a big banner saying Save the Woods.
Merrydale closure decision confirmed. Civic chiefs have axed a children's respite centre in Winchester despite overwhelming support for keeping it open. Hampshire County Council is set to close Merrydale in Kingsworthy, which cares for young people with learning disabilities. But Councillor Jackie Porter confirmed there would be a Liberal Democrat-led challenge, known as a call-in, to ensure that every parent was satisfied about alternative arrangements before the centre closes. The challenge states that Merrydale is part of a group of buildings on the site and the other is still occupied, meaning Merrydale is likely to sit idle. It adds that the decision to close is not dependent on receiving assurance that all current children would be happily settled elsewhere first. A consultation in September, which also considered the future of Sunbeams in Aldershot, indicated most respondents, 87%, had strong concern about the closures. The decision was made by Executive Lead Member for Children's Services, Keith Manns, following a vote in favour by the Children and Young People Select Committee, which was met with shouts of shame from the public. Councillor Manns added a recommendation that a regular report was to be produced showing whether parents had found suitable alternative accommodation, including transport provision. He said, "There are substantial costs associated with keeping these buildings and facilities up to standard and fit for purpose, and it is my view that this money can be put to better use. I am reassured that the 35 children and their families who will be directly affected by this decision will continue to have access to overnight residential respite care from a range of high-quality, independent providers." Catherine Spencer from Horton Heath, whose 15-year-old daughter Molly uses the centre, said, "We're gutted. I know the building is not optimum, but the staff are outstanding. They're like a second family. When Molly goes there, I know she is safe." Nikki Bloxlidge from Chandler's Ford, whose daughter Ella, 11, uses the centre, said, "None of us are saying Merrydale is the answer to everything, but there is no viable alternative close to home."
Top French honour for wine expert Gerard. A Hampshire hotelier battling with cancer has been honoured by his fellow Frenchmen in a ceremony that has boosted his spirits. Wine expert Gerard Basset, who co-founded Hotel de Vin in Southgate Street, Winchester, in 1994, has been presented with the second highest accolade awarded by France, the Order of Agricultural Merit, in an emotional ceremony in London. Gerard was among four members of the wine trade to be awarded the Ordre de Mérite Agricole, I apologise for my French, by the French ambassador Jean-Pierre Jouet. Founded in 1883, the award is the second only to the Légion d'honneur. The ambassador said the Mérite Agricole is the highest regarded in France due to the importance of the agricultural and rural community. Therefore, I am delighted to present this medal to Gerard, who has done so much to promote French wines. Gerard, 60, now runs the Hotel Terravina at Woodlands in the New Forest with his wife Nina. Speaking after the ceremony at Kitchen W8 restaurant in Kensington, he said, "The final months of 2017 were not easy for me and my family. Cancer is a debilitating illness, and while I continue to fight it with every ounce of energy, there have been some difficult times. To be recognised by my country of birth for my work, championing the magnificent wine it produces, could not have come at a better time. to say it lifted me to receive the Order Agricole Mérite from the French ambassador is an understatement. I am lucky to have a fantastic team at Hotel Terravina, who, along with my family, have been my rock these last few months, and as ever, I share my success with them. Gerard is a former world champion sommelier and the only person to hold the three major titles simultaneously, Master of Wine, Master Sommelier, and the MBA. He is currently absent from the hotel after being diagnosed with cancer of the esophagus, but Gerard has vowed to beat the disease, telling friends, "This is just another challenge and I will fight it head on and win." Born and brought up in France, he originally trained as a chef but embarked on a career as a sommelier after moving to the UK in the 1980s, I do apologise. And there is a picture of Gerard Bassett and his wife, and there's also a picture of the front of the Hotel de Ville in Winchester.
Farm plans opposed by villagers. Plans to convert former farm buildings into a business space look set to be approved, despite fears the increased traffic will put residents at risk. The proposals for North Winchester Farm, near Kingsworthy, are due to go before Winchester City Council's Planning Committee today. If approved, it would see the various buildings converted into 4,200 square metres of commercial floor space, along with parking and access off Stoke Charity Road. However, concerns have been raised that the new use will result in more traffic driving through the heart of Kingsworthy. A spokesman for the parish council, which objected to the proposal, said, "The site is situated in a mainly green belt area. Any development of this style would be detrimental to Kingsworthy. No indication is shown as to the size of the vehicles using the site or the frequency of traffic movements. There are no trunk roads close to the site. Stoke Charity Road and Loveton Lane are not appropriate for increased volumes of traffic. If drivers start finding that the Loveton Lane A33 junction is inappropriate, then they will start using Springvale Road. The increased traffic through the heart of the village will result in an increased risk to children walking to school via Springvale Road."
Number of empty homes, a scandal. And there's a photograph of some very Edwardian looking terraced housing with all the windows blocked up, so clearly empty buildings. "The number of empty homes in the Winchester district is a scandal, according to a Liberal Democrat councillor. Martin Todd asked Winchester City Council leader Caroline Horrell, who is also portfolio holder for housing, what action was being taken to address 318 houses that have been empty for more than 6 months. A meeting of full council heard that 95 properties have stood empty for more than 2 years, with 42 remaining empty for more than 5 years, and 18 for more than 10 years. But 236 long-term empty homes have been brought back into use in 2016-17. Councillor Todd said, "Given the extreme pressure we have on housing, it's a scandal that so many of these homes are staying empty for so long." Councillor Horrell replied, "An empty home strategy was approved in March 2016, and in the last year officers have been reviewing the database, visiting empty properties, liaising with landlords, and taking action to encourage them being brought back into use. The empty home strategy is currently under review, and a report on progress will be considered by the Cabinet Housing Committee in March 2018. Councillor Horrell added that they were making concerted efforts to bring homes back into use. "I don't think we've been shirking on our responsibilities. We will continue to improve." Councillor Jamie Scott asked whether it would be useful to map where the empty properties in the district were, so that members are better able to do more liaison work with landlords to take these properties on. Councillor Horrell replied, "That piece of information is available to us. You may have local knowledge that can help us, so we welcome sharing that with members.
Malone and Murray on the way out of city. Director of Football Dave Malone and Chairman Paul Murray have announced that they are leaving Winchester City at the end of the season. Having come to the aid of the club 4.5 years ago to help save them from extinction, the pair are ready to step away from football. Former Eastleigh chairman Murray will turn 70 this year and recently stood down as managing director of his company, Paul Murray PLC. I'm trying to scale down my areas of responsibility. Dave and I have done what we needed to do when we came to the club in 2013, and I've enjoyed it very much. We've stabilised the club and set it on its way again, and it seems needs someone to come in now and take it on. After leaving Eastleigh, I thought that was it. But when Winchester were in danger of folding, Dave and I decided to take it on. We both live locally and we had the experience. The club's in good shape now and hopefully someone will lead it into the Southern Premier. For ex-Eastleigh Director of Football Malone, it will mark the end of 18 years in non-league football, which began at Bashley and peaked in his first spell at Winchester when they lifted the FA Vase in Birmingham in 2004. This latest stay at the Simply Health City ground began with the high hopes that the City Council landlords would support the club's dream of a 3G pitch and clubhouse renovations. But 4 years on, nothing has materialised. Paul and I are both disappointed with the City Council. They have given us little support, said Malone. It all stood up financially and we were prepared to pay substantial rent, but the council did a feasibility study and we went round and round in circles before they came back and said that they didn't think the money needed to be invested here. They don't seem to be interested in football. Maybe they want to see Wessex League football here again. We came in when the club was on its knees and we've done as much as we can within the confines of what we can afford. Unless we get other investments in or more council backing, how much further can we go? Malone's motivation for returning in the first place was that he couldn't bear to see the club he loves go to the wall. He and Murray are making this announcement early to allow plenty of time for someone else to step in. On the pitch, Winchester are going well in the EvoStick South West under manager Craig Davis. They moved seventh in the table on the back of last Saturday's 3-1 win over Larkhall Athletic and are within a shout of the playoffs. Off the pitch, they need more investment if they are to progress up to the non-league pyramid. But Malone said financially the club is on an even keel. We don't owe anyone anything, and the last thing we want is to see the club go backwards. Paul and I came to Winchester because it was about to fold, and I like to think that we'll be leaving a legacy that is as much as anything. This gives the club a chance to regroup and look for fresh blood to come in. I don't think we'll leave the club in a situation where it will implode, but whether it goes backwards is another issue. We're trying to get other people involved, and there are one or two possibilities. If anyone out there is interested, we'd love to hear from them. Malone has no plans to join another club. He admitted, I've got no interest in going anywhere else. There's nowhere I can think of that I want to go or anything I want to do. Paul and I decided 2 or 3 months ago to leave Winchester. We both feel we have done our time. I'd like a complete rest from football after 18 years. That said, I don't intend to sever all ties with Winchester City. I will support the club.
Joined up approach on homeless. Rough sleeping and homelessness in Winchester is set to be tackled in a more coordinated way, the City Council has heard. Councillor Linda Gemmell asked Caroline Horrell, City Council leader, what plans are being worked on to improve the issue. Councillor Horrell said, in recognition that a number of agencies and charities support the same individuals, although not always in a coordinated way and with some duplication of effort and funding, a senior level multi-agency meeting was introduced last autumn. We anticipate formalising in the spring a panel which the chief executive is likely to take a lead role to oversee and explore joint best practice examples of working together, joint commission opportunities and sharing of funding pots. We are currently in talks with a housing provider to jointly commission an alternative housing first model of provision to reach those more entrenched rough sleepers. At full council, she added that the plan would be proportional and mindful. There are currently 6 rough sleepers. Councillor Martin Todd asked whether the number of rough sleepers was due to a failure in National Conservative policy. We are picking up the pieces here, but it is her party who has failed.
Wildlife Trust's new vision for housing. Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust has unveiled its new vision for building wildlife-friendly homes. In a new report, it sets out how government, councils and conservation organisations can work to build green housing. The guidelines call for a focus on the quality and location of new homes rather than purely housing numbers. Among their proposals are locating new housing in areas already well served by infrastructure, mapping out wildlife-rich habitats to better protect them, and designing homes and streets to include space for wildlife. This approach will benefit wildlife, residents and developers, and call on the government to put nature at the heart of planning. The report also states that all new housing developments must avoid damaging the last remaining wild places.
And that's all we have for you today. Please return the memory stick in the yellow wallet as soon as you've finished with it. Thanks to this week's editors and to all the volunteers who prepare and dispatch the newspaper and the magazine to you. And thanks to our readers today. Norma?
Goodbye.
Nick?
Goodbye.
And Jane?
Thank you and goodbye.
And goodbye from me, Noel Thorpe Tracy, and thanks for listening. I hope you have a very pleasant week. Goodbye.